Okay, let's take a poll. How weird does it feel to be called someone's fiance, right? The first time you hear it, you do like a double take. Your heart kind of flutters, and before you know it, you go from, let's just enjoy this moment, to we're planning a fall wedding. That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place and have fun along the way. From free planning tools like a budget tracker, super necessary, and website, to a venue and vendor discovery tool that matches you with your dream team, everything on Zola is designed to make your wedding journey as easy as possible. And with invites that can be completely customized and a wedding registry packed with gifts you actually want. Zola takes you from save our date to thanks so much without breaking a sweat. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com. Happy wedding.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in to the Take Command Podcast Playoff Edition. Let's go, Logan. We have a playoff game to preview. Commanders, Bucks. It's Sunday night. It is in Tampa, in the shadows of that giant pirate ship. It is where the Commanders started their season, and they are headed back for their first playoff game of the Jaden Daniels, Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, Josh Harris era. And Logan, it is going to be one heck of a matchup. Tampa is a very, very potent team. We'll get to what Jaden Daniels and company can do to match that in just a little bit. But we're actually going to start with the Commanders defense against this Tampa offense, an offense led by Baker Mayfield, best season of his career, one of the best quarterback seasons we've seen in a while. That's not going to be up for like MVP discussion. I mean, Baker threw for 4,500 yards, 41 touchdowns, and he's not going to finish top five in MVP voting. That's just kind of the craziness of the quarterback position this year. But a prolific season. Bucky Irving was also fantastic, the running back, the rookie coming in from Oregon. And Liam Cohen, the guy who's orchestrating it, is probably going to get a head coaching job very, very soon if he wants one, Logan. So when you watch this team, you watch Tampa's offense, and we think back to what we saw week one, we think of what it is now. What has Liam Cohen done that's gotten him so much praise and so much success this season?
Yeah, I'm glad we're starting with Liam Cohen because I do think that he does some really good stuff offensively. So I think just if you look like kind of super high level, I think you look at a well-engineered run game on first and second down. And what I mean by that is like he tends to find personnel and formation that give the offensive line and the blocking surface some type of numerical advantage. And then you stack on top of that some type of motion or shift that kind of just challenges the run fits of the defense, right? Like the one that comes to mind from the first game is we're going to be in like a kind of a tight formation. We're going to motion that slot receiver out with like kind of a jet on a fast motion. And then the nickel player, who's sometimes Jeremy Chinn, who's sometimes Noah, like has to run out with that. And then all of a sudden the B gap is wide open. That motion that's kind of given the Commanders a hard time throughout the year has been, was the genesis started with Liam Cohen week one versus Tampa Bay, in my opinion. And then you look at like the jet sweeps, the traps, the misdirection in the backfield. It really felt like, honestly, and this is a compliment, it felt like a classic, like single wing offense. You know, everyone kind of gives Mike McDaniels this credit for bringing single wing principles to the spread. And, you know, I don't know if that's exactly true, but I think you see a lot of that with Liam Cohen. And what I mean by that is there's misdirection. We're attacking the three technique a lot in our run scheme, right? The guy that's to the tight end strength. We're finding ways to trap guys. We're basically giving you a bunch of different backfield sets that all kind of marry together. I think that's the other thing that shows up. Like, it wasn't as successful versus New Orleans, but for example, this is like the simplest version, is they're running like GT, so guard, tackle, counter, right? So that's where you pull the guard and tackle to the strength of the formation. And so they have GT, but they have a jet sweep in the backfield, right? So they run that one time, the defensive end pitches down, the next time Baker pulls it and throws it to the flat, then they have a jet sweep straight off of the GT pull action. So they have three runs off of almost exactly the same kind of pre-snap, post-snap look. And I think that that's really good stuff. Like, I think back to, again, I like it because that's how Kyle does it, right? It's like we install a run, we're going to marry a play action to it, we're going to marry a keeper to it, we're going to marry a complimentary run off it. Like, when I'm at the high school, like, that's how I install a play. I say, this is the run I want, this is what I want to do. And then I go those three kind of derivatives off of it. Now, obviously, this is the NFL, so they can go, you know, exponentially more because the guys right. can handle more. But I think like that's something that I really, really like about his first and second down stuff. And then on third down, I think they just do a really good job of not always, but most of the time finding good and creative ways to get their playmakers in good spots to be successful. You know, like Mike Evans, it was Chris Godwin earlier in the season. Bucky Irving, not so much. He's more of a first and second down guy, but I think that's good stuff. And so that's good offensive principle. And then I think on third down, you're getting a big elevation from Baker Mayfield in terms of extending plays. So I think the offensive structure is excellent. I think you're putting guys in good positions to be successful. And I think all that goes back to Liam Cohen kind of maximizing talent. And I do think it's interesting. You know, Will Levis was, you know, kind of at one point supposed to be a top 15 pick in the NFL. That was when he was with Liam Cohen at Kentucky, right? Like, and so he does have this knack and understanding for – and this is something that's really hard to articulate to someone who doesn't watch a lot of football. He has a really good understanding of how to manipulate coverage through route concept, right? Cliff does too, right? The smart ones, the really good ones do. And he's got a really good feel for that. And I think he has a really good feel for coaching the defensive reaction to certain concepts. And I think that's one of the reasons you see Baker kind of operating at such a high efficiency, in addition to Baker's natural playmaking ability.
And all of it has come alive this year. And there's so many different ways to look at everything you just said. Just since you mentioned Baker, one, I think totally the in-structure stuff. I've said it a bunch this year. There's no one that throws with more conviction than Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
That dude drop. I love watching Baker play because that dude drops back. It's like, this ball's supposed to go here. Coach Cohen said I can throw it. And he will step into that ball and just drive it. Now, if you can trick him, he'll throw it right to you. And he's had some, you know, four touchdown, two pick kind of games this year. And you have to take advantage of those opportunities. But I think the thing that's been magical about Baker's season is the play extending. And it started week one against Washington. They could not bring him down, even though he was under pressure quite a bit. And in fact, according to Next Gen Stats, Mayfield has completed 34 of his 47 passes outside of the pocket for 406 yards, five touchdowns, and a pick this season. That's the highest completion percentage on such passes in a season in the Next Gen Stats era. So that's 72% outside the pocket. Now, he's only outside the pocket 10.3% of his attempts. That's fourth lowest in the NFL. But you got to make sure that when he gets outside the pocket, you plaster. And I think the competitiveness of a guy like Evans, the slipperiness of guys like Rashad White and Bucky Irving as receivers, Cade Otton has been terrific this year from the tight end spot. So it is, you know, can you keep him in the pocket? If he gets out, you got to make sure that you plaster, because as good as the offensive structure is, the reason they've gone from like good to great is that extra stuff where the players make it come alive. And I think you see that in the run game too. If we want to keep touching on Baker, we can, but man, what Bucky Irving is doing in the run game is also fantastic. They have, you know, when you create good matchups, it's easier when it's Mike Evans, a future Hall of Famer. Like, so they've just done a really good job of here's a great structure. It's kind of what I've always, you know, some people are like, oh, when you've got great players, just simplify it down. I'm like, well, what if you put great players in great structure? And that's kind of what they've done. I don't know great outside of like Evans we're talking about historically, but certainly very good players in an excellent structure, and you're getting one of the most prolific offenses in the league.
Yeah, I definitely think he's maximizing. And just to double click on the Baker thing, and we'll talk about Bucky Irvin here in a second, but like I do think that you know, one of the things about Baker, it's you were kind of alluding to an extension outside the pocket, but I also think there's an extension in the pocket, which you've seen too. And so basically what I would kind of clump those under is just second reaction throws. And like in New Orleans, he had a bunch of them. In our first game, he had a bunch of them. Like in the Atlanta game, he had a bunch of them. Like pretty much every week, to your point, he has a bunch of these where there's a pressure. He kind of ducks a tackle. He kind of steps up in the pocket. He's either scrambling for a first down, or he's made excellent decisions in that regard. Like he's made decisions is the wrong word. He's made plays as a thrower and as a runner on third and long situations to keep them on the field. And everyone talks about this is like kind of a national NFL story, but you know, the Brock Purdy effect on Kyle Shanahan's offense, right? Kyle Shanahan was great, like with the pen, about getting guys open and dictating throws and manipulating coverage and all that stuff. But when Brock Purdy got there, he elevated, because when it wasn't there, he's able to scramble, extend plays, get that second reaction throw. And I think that's what you're seeing and kind of what you're saying from Baker there. And it's the thing that breaks defenses. It breaks defenses, quite frankly, because you're really playing for that like 2.3 second kind of throw. And Baker's average time to throw is 2.7. So obviously there are some of those kind of on schedule, on time throws in there. But to add those tenths of seconds, that means you're extending and you're getting out of stuff. And I saw a statistic, I forget exactly where it was, and I'm going to butcher it, but you know, on third down, his time to throw is like 3.13, which is like NFL leading in terms of time to throw, which again, I think captures this metric we're trying to talk about here. So to me, if you're the Commanders, you got to say, hey, we have to rush with tremendous discipline. We have to have a great rush blitz plan to get pressure on him, because again, no team is good enough to handle a 3 second drop back. It's just too long, right? Guys find ways to get open. And if Baker is doing a good job finding him, that's going to be devastating. So can you manage that kind of loose, like his playmaking from the pocket, I think is a huge storyline in this game. And it's something that like, when you talk about, like, I give Bram notes. Yeah, that's like my first note, like on third down, can you keep him in the pocket? And then can we hold up from a coverage structure standpoint in the back end? It's going to be a big point for me, because in addition to his playmaking ability, the offensive line is a playmaking unit in its own right, with Tristan Wirfs and guys like that playing really good football. So it's this really, it becomes like one of those things where you're like, damn, this is going to be really hard to deal with defensively.
And they're really good at staying on schedule. And we'll get to the running game in a second, but another element of the pass game is the screen game. It's arguably the best screen game in the entire league. And Baker actually leads the NFL in yardage on throws behind the line of scrimmage. And they'll throw them to receivers. They'll throw them to tight ends. They'll throw them, obviously, to the running backs, who are very, very good space players. But it kind of, when we talk about the Baker's average time to throw and that number being fairly low, it's balanced by these longer plays that he extends with 1.0 second throws, because he's getting the ball out on a screen. And in week one, it was actually Baker's third quickest of the season. He was 2.36 seconds in week one against the Commanders, including a couple of touchdowns. Now, those were fade routes to Mike Evans, so, you know, take that for what it's worth in terms of the time to throw. Quick throws, touchdowns. It's not like he's getting out quick slants and guys running 70 yards. You only have to drop back so far when you're on the 1 yard line and you just loft the ball up to a 6'4", you know, Mike Evans. But the screen game element is really huge, because I think Joe has pressured quite a bit. You know, he was asked a couple of weeks ago, he's like, oh, can you generate more pressure? He's like, I don't think I can. Like, we just got to land with what we got, because I don't think I can blitz much more than I have this season. And there's one play that I wrote down in my notes from earlier, from week one, that's like screen into blitz. And if you get caught in the wrong look, the wrong blitz against a screen, like that becomes an explosive play. And so whether it's just simply, hey, this is a pretty mundane screen that gets 6 yards, but now it's second and four, or a big explosive play, they've got to be really on their P's and Q's on this screen game, both running back, wide receiver, and even a guy like Kate Otten, occasionally they'll throw one too. And that's an enormous part of their success, because then they're just not in a ton of those third and longs, even though, as you said, Baker will make some plays if they get there.
Yeah, and it's... their first and second down efficiency is good. Obviously, in the New Orleans game, wasn't great. That's the most recent game they played. I think New Orleans had a really good plan for them. And obviously, we saw how good New Orleans is on first and second down at stopping the run and kind of managing some of these elements of the Tampa Bay offense. And you mentioned the screen game, and I really thought like New Orleans just a tremendous job of being like, we know this is something you want to do, like we're gonna have a really good plan for it and we're gonna be aggressive to stop it. And I think that's kind of the mindset you got to bring into this game, is like you got to be super physical on first and second down. You got to, I don't know if we talked about this on this show, because I've done a lot of these shows, but one of the things that sticks out to me is like Joe Witt Jr. wants to kind of play, you know, light boxes. I think we've talked about this a bunch, right?
Yeah,
he wants to play
about
light boxes on first and second down. And the thing is, when you look at New Orleans playing light boxes, their front four is good enough to kind of physically mash it and kind of make it tough to run the football. They can kind of allocate more resources. They can play different coverage structures to help stop screens and things like that. Can this team, can this front four and the two linebackers do the same thing, would be my question. Can you play in a physical manner on first and second down that allows you to play coverage structures to take away play action shots, to take away screens, to kind of have that level of focus where you can kind of say our six guys are taking care of the run and the rest of you guys can handle the screen, handle the play action, handle these like other elements to the RPO. And so I think that's where I get a little bit nervous, because over the course of the season, while I do think the defense has been good at what Joe Witt's wanted them to do, they've had a hard time with that main piece, which is stopping the run. So, like, again, you look at what other teams have done well, and I'm thinking about New Orleans right now, really physical in the front four. Linebackers, you know, DeMario Davis did an excellent job sniffing out screens, running the football, like was really just tremendous in that game. And, like, can you get a similar level of performance from this defense? I think is like the $1 million question. Like, so to me, third down, containing Baker Mayfield. First down, it's like stopping the run, like really is what it comes down to. And we're going to talk about Bucky Irving here, because you got some stats about him, but that to me is the story. Screens, runs. He's the straw that stirs the drink to me on first and second down. He's been impressive this year.
Whether you want to
buy.
In a bear market or
sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
So here's your Bucky Irving stat of the day. Bucky Irving forced a missed tackle on 35.8% of his touches this season, the highest rate in the NFL for a minimum of 100 touches. Irving gained an additional 609 yards after forcing missed tackles. Wow. And second most in the league behind Derrick Henry. Irving's missed tackle rate was 13.2% higher than backfield mate Rashad White during the regular season. The Commanders now, here's the good news. They have missed a tackle on just 11.6% of tackle opportunities this season. That's the fifth best rate in the NFL, while allowing 774 yards after missed tackles. That's the seventh fewest in the NFL. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Last time the Commanders run Sunday Night Football, in fact, is Bijan Robinson, for volume's sake, had the most forced missed tackles in the league. By rate, it's Irving. And then, you know, they did a decent enough job. There were certainly some missed tackles. But I think the other big one is the yardage, right? Like, what happens if you miss a tackle? Is it then a house call? Or is it a 30-yard gain? Or are you rallying to the football? And so you miss one, it's enough to slow the guy down, and someone else comes out in and finishes the job, or someone else comes in and finishes the job. And I think that's going to be a key thing, is can you rally? Because in watching a little bit of tape on their running game, if the play plays out remotely close to what it does when you drew it up as a coach, this dude's nasty. But if you can muddy it up, and you see some teams that did a really good job in spurts or, for entire games, that were able to muddy the front and just make it to where that, you know, when Vince Lombardi drew it up and he's a seal here and a seal there and an alley, if that alley doesn't exist, then you're okay. And that's against any running back, but especially a guy as slippery and I think as explosive, a guy who can go for 50 like Bucky Irving. He's a young running back, doesn't have the hits on his legs. We see this all the time with younger running backs. They still have that like top end vertical speed, and they're in the league for 3 years and they don't run for 50 yards anymore. Bucky Irving's a rookie. He's got that to him. And so if you can muddy up the front, and that means John Allen and Daron Payne and Jerzon Newton, like y'all are going to have to do some dirty work, then rally and tackle, you can be okay against this run game. But if you give him that crease, if you give him that alley, and maybe it's the one that's designed, maybe it's a cutback. There's a run against the Chargers where it's a trap, and he sees Derwin James come inside and go to fill, and he just run because they've got the edge sealed, and dude, he just gets out for 18 yards. And you're like, dang, that is insane vision. But if you can make it muddy, you can survive against this run game. If not, he's going to slip a tackle and you're toast.
No, I think that's 100% right. I think he does a really – it's interesting to watch him because I don't think on first and second – like he's not like Bijan where it's like 5 yards, 6 yards, 7 yards. He's – the rush down-to-down efficiency is not there because he's not a big guy. So when it's a little bit muddy, he can't like cram it.
There's no space for him to slip tackles and things that he does.
Yeah, so I think, again, I'll go back to the New Orleans game because I think they were winning the first half. They looked dominant. New Orleans did in that game. So it's, I think it's a really good marker of like what, and they kind of play similar structures on first down to what the Commanders do. Is the thing that sticks out to me about that is like he went for like one, he's going for two, he's got three, he's got a negative one, and then he pops one off for 40, you know? And it's just like that is a backbreaking play because then what does Tampa Bay go down and do? They go down and score. And it's just his ability to, it was like just a duo, kind of like this, the modern duo now where they're kind of flash mosting the tight end, he's kicking out the defensive end, and they're wrapping for the linebacker. And Bucky Irving, there's a small crease, kind of works his way through, runs up on the linebacker, makes him miss, make the safety miss, and you're like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to score. And thank God the safety slowed him down enough where they're able to tackle him. But I just think about comparing that to the first game where I thought Liam Cohen did, we go back and kind of bring it at full circle here, did an excellent job on first and second down with traps and whams and taking advantage of the Commander's penetrating three technique, like really took advantage of them. And obviously Rashard White was the starting running back at the time. But getting Bucky Irving into those same looks is a catastrophic proposal, in my opinion. Because you talk about a seal and an alley. Like, that was something that on, I would say, pretty much every time they ran trap, there was a cavernous hole that was really hard to fill. And thank God the guys were able to make tackles. But I think to your point, because of his missed tackle rate, because of his explosiveness, and really he's not like top-end fast. His acceleration is nuts. Like, I think he ran a 4.6 at the combine. Like, he didn't run fast, but he plays like an absolute demon in terms of speed. Like, that could be that, those creases that we had in the first game. And again, the defense is a totally different animal now. I think they're much better coach. I think they understand kind of schematically what they need to do at a higher level.
It was also probably their worst missed tackle game of the season. Like, it was kind of that week one, like, we haven't really tackled yet. And you got dudes like Bobby Wagner and Jeremy Chinn who don't really miss tackles, missing tackles all over the place.
Yeah, I'd agree. But I think that's something where I'd be like, hey, we got to get our rules locked in on how we're going to play these runs. Because if I'm Liam Cohen, I might not run those all the same. But I'm saying, man, these were so good. And these runs have been so good versus Washington this entire year. Philly hit a couple gashes. You know, Baltimore had a couple like this where it's like, let's give it a shot and let's see if they've got it cleaned up. And if they don't, then we're going to run it. If not, we've got other stuff we can get to. But that's something, especially with Bucky Irving, he's going to get those touches now. And you cannot win this game if he's got three or four explosives. Like, you just can't. And I think that's something you got to just be hyper aware of.
Yeah, and to your point, looking at the numbers behind that, you know, explosiveness, you can kind of measure an EPA per play. Like, do you get these big chunks? Do you score? Do you get first downs? He is fourth in running back EPA per rush. So it's the guys that you would expect that are ahead of him. But the only guys that are ahead of him in EPA per attempt are Jahmyr Gibbs. He's third. Jahmyr Gibbs, Derrick Henry, Bucky Irving.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's tied with Saquon. An EPA per rush, but he's 12th in success rate.
It doesn't surprise me.
Talk about down in, down out efficiency. He's much more average.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise. I think those statistics illuminate him perfectly, right? That's exactly who he is as a player, right? He's really explosive. He gets you first downs. He gets you chunk plays. And again, the down and down isn't there the way it is for Derrick Henry or Bijan Robinson. He really, it's funny that he's the third guy with Saquon because he reminds me a lot of Saquon. Like, in terms of, I'm not a great dirty runner, right? But when there's a crease, I'm going to take it for 50 and you're going to be like, damn, like that happened real quick. So I think Washington has shown at times this year that they can batten down the hatches and stop the run, specifically in the second half of that. In the first half of the New Orleans game, the second half of the Philly game, they can do it. But I think that's got to be, to me, a really huge point of emphasis. Because if you watch the first and second down cut up, they are pretty dogmatic about running on first down. Like I'd say it's probably about 70. It feels like it's 70% of the time. And I don't know. I didn't look up a stat for it. But when I'm watching, I'm like, this is a run. Here's a run. Here's a run. And then they kind of are relying on them being in second and seven, second and six, or getting an explosive carry to kind of maximize the offense. So I do think that's a huge part of it. And if you can get them in a second and eight, second and nine, the way that New Orleans did, I think you got a real shot at kind of throwing a monkey wrench in their offense. Because I'll tell you, even for as good as Baker's been on third and long this year, like, you can't live that way, you know, and Baker's going to throw incompletions. You're going to take a sack. Like, he's going to throw interceptions. And I think, like, to me, it's funny talking through every single week. You're like, sometimes you want, hey, let's put the ball in Baker's hands, put the ball. I think being more aggressive on first down this week is probably in the cards. You know, a little bit more straight cover three, asking to leverage those outside corners a little bit more. And if Marshawn Lattimore's healthy, that becomes a little bit easier. But I think that's something you really got to think about. Just being a little bit more kind of breaking type a little bit and saying, hey, we got to stop this run game on first and second down.
And now for our featured presentation. Speaking of Marshawn Lattimore, that's a lot of what folks want to talk about is the Evans-Lattimore matchup. And why wouldn't you? Because they've fought a bunch. They've punched each other in the helmet. Every football. Why do football players punch each other in the helmet? Doesn't that hurt, Logan?
You kind of just lose your mind. Honestly, you just lose your mind. Like, there's no, like, as I've done it, I've punched someone in the helmet, and you're just like, that was dumb. Like, my hand hurts real bad now, right?
Yeah.
But you're just so mad at this person for doing something ridiculous.
Because you're playing a violent physical sport where testosterone is overflowing and you lose control of your emotions, because that is, of course, what happens, because that's the way human beings work. Yeah.
And you're like, my hand hurt. I remember one time Niles Paul got in a fight in practice and really just popped off on somebody. It was like, it sounded like it was like bing, 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 because he boxed a little bit in his spare time. And so, but you know, the guy on the other side is totally fine because he's got a helmet on. And then Niles comes up to me. He's like, I think I just broke my hand. I'm like, come on, man. Like, you can't be breaking your hand in a practice on like a Tuesday because
you punched the dude in the helmet.
In the helmet. Anyway, we digress.
We digress. So Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore have punched each other in the helmet. I feel like there was a time where maybe someone swung a helmet at each other. I don't know. They've been getting after it, man. Yeah.
For years, they've been getting after it.
Whatever. I haven't gone back and watched any of it this week. The highlights of the fights or the lowlights, depending on your perspective. I'm sure that NBC will show it Sunday night, a couple of fisticuffs. But here's the thing. Through all of that hullabaloo, there is real football behind this rivalry as well. Yeah. There is a reason that Mike Evans has been very frustrated with Marshawn Lattimore, and that is that twice a year for many years, Marshawn Lattimore covered Mike Evans as well as anyone has ever covered Mike Evans. So Marshawn Lattimore is aligned across from Mike Evans on at least 50% of his routes in 12 of 13 career games, including the playoffs, with only one game under 50%. And ironically enough, Logan Paulson, that game was when they matched up earlier this season before Lattimore got traded. So they've already played once this year.
Oh, right, and, right, yeah.
Yeah, in the week, whatever that was, the early week matchup. I think it was like week three or something like that between New Orleans and Tampa. And for whatever reason, Dennis Allen, at the time the head coach and defensive coordinator, de facto defensive coordinator for the Saints, did not have Lattimore follow Evans around. But every other game that they've ever played, like it's been star coverage. It's been, you know, shadowing the whole deal. Overall, Lattimore has aligned across from Evans on 271 of 398 routes across those games. That's 68.1%. Lattimore has challenged Evans at the line of scrimmage consistently across those matchup, aligning in press coverage 67% of the time. Evans has caught 16 of his 31 targets with Lattimore as the nearest defender, for 305 yards and three touchdowns with an average target separation of 1.7 yards, but nearly half of those yards came in their two matchups in 2018. Evans has been held without a reception against Lattimore in five of their 13 career matchups. So, Marshawn Lattimore looks like he's going to play. He's a full participant in practice on Wednesday. We record on Thursday morning, so unless there's a setback, Marshawn Lattimore's good to go. You have to imagine after he followed A.J. Brown around that that's going to be the plan here. How does that change what we saw week one, where Mike Evans had a pretty substantial day with two touchdowns against Benjamin St. Juice, who played him very tightly, but is just doesn't have the ball skills and the play strength and the competitive catch point ability that Marshawn Lattimore has, which is how Mike Evans, you know, those characteristics are the things that are going to send Mike Evans to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually think, you know, like you said, I think Benjamin St. Juice had a pretty solid game. I think two things. One, we didn't talk about this in the preview. I think the defensive secondary in general is so much better than they were week one. I think, and it's not even just like, oh, like they're physically better. No, it's just like they understand the defensive concepts better. They're communicating better. They're on the same page more. There's not these free runners and explosive plays, and they understand kind of checks and bunches and all this stuff at a much higher level. So I think that's a huge element. I also think when you look at the second Philly game and Marshawn and how they matched up with A.J. Brown and how Joe Wood Jr. called the game, he just was way more aggressive. And by aggressive, I mean they just played way more man coverage. And I do think that this is a talented group for Tampa Bay, but they're not overly scary, if that makes, does that make sense what I'm saying? Like they're good, but they're not great. And I think Mike Evans right now, at this point in his career, Hall of Fame career, like you said, I'm going to give him his credit, and he deserves his credit. He's one of my favorite players I've ever watched. I used to go watch his tape like in season when I was playing, because I just really enjoyed watching him. He's not the same guy that he was earlier in his career, right? He's a bigger body guy, hyper competitive, and he's still good, but they don't have the teeth without Chris Godwin. Like Chris Godwin was the guy that kept them on schedule, made them efficient. McMillan right now is kind of stepping into that role.
He's doing a really good job, but he's not Chris Godwin.
He's not Chris Godwin. So Ott's a good player, but I think you, in terms of coverage in a man-to-man situation, if Lattimore's playing, Marshawn Lattimore's playing, all of a sudden everything kind of gets real even, and you're like, okay, I think Mike Sanders still can cover the slot receiver. I think Jeremy Chinn matches up okay with Ott, and all of a sudden you're like, we're in a good spot here. So I do think that his addition is going to be huge. And I just thinking about those numbers you were talking about, and just watching Mike Evans over the course of his career, like Marshawn's play strength is tremendous. And I think that's going to be a huge advantage here, because what Mike Evans does is he is bigger than you. He's stronger than you. He's better than you at the catch point. And with Marshawn, it's not that it negates that advantage.
Right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why you see him become so less effective in the games where he's playing Marshawn. So if he does play, I do think it allows Joe Witt Jr. on first and second down to do some of the stuff we're talking about. We can play another guy in the box. We can be more aggressive. We can maybe bring a run pressure. We can be more aggressive with our blitzing on third down. Like that all kind of comes out of that. And I think, he was like, what am I supposed to do when Marshawn's back? Is it really going to affect me that much? When you look at the Philly game, it's like, yeah, you were way more aggressive in terms of coverage structure, right? Usually like to throw in some cover two, some cover three, more zone. And all of a sudden it's like, the big dogs here, let's let them hunt. So I think that's something that I'm excited for, because I do think it just changes even Joe Witt Jr.'s mindset a little bit. And if that, and just that shift in mindset, I think it's going to be really, really helpful in a lot of the kind of pain points and struggle points that the Tampa Bay offense presents.
For sure. And I think it's also worth mentioning, you know, in week one, not only was it fresh, was it new, it's Joe's first game as a coordinator, it's these guys' first time playing together. The guys playing are different. Like Emmanuel Forbes was starting corner in that game. Jamin Davis played double-digit snaps as a rotational defensive end in that game. So you talk about stopping the run. Like you've upgraded from Jamin Davis to Jalen Holmes and some of the other guys that have done a good job for this team. Is the
like
rotational
John Baptiste.
Pieces.
Like Daron Payne at end. Like all those guys, you just feel much more comfortable and confident about those guys in those roles as opposed to Jamin, who, you know,
he
was making a
transition. They tried it, and he wasn't there to stop the run. Put it that way.
Right.
Fedarian Mathis played double-digit snaps in that game. So you have very, very different dudes in some key spots, including one of your starting corners that has gone from Emmanuel Forbes to Marshawn Lattimore. Nevertheless, the experience of an entire regular season, not only for the players, but for Joe in his first season as a coordinator. And I think we've seen him get better and better at calling this stuff over the course of the season. So it's going to be really exciting to watch that battle. So I would expect Tampa to certainly get some wins, but can Washington do enough to hold it down to allow Jaden and the offense to put up the points they need to and get a playoff win for the first time since 2005?